Well, take me through a day, a night that you were on night shift. You go in.
Well, I was night work manager, and I got the night work manager's job because I was training manager, and I had recruited and trained the men to do work that was normally done during the day by girls. And they had said, "No, this can't be done." And I said, "Rubbish, of course it can." It just happened to find the ones who were dexterous enough.
Yeah.
So we had recruited men for night work, and this was temporary work. They were told there might not be a permanent job here because once the move takes place. Mm-hmm. And they were mostly young men between 19 and about 25. And you can imagine what that was like, because I even had been approached by the parole officer in St. Patrick's to know would I take a couple out of there who were deserving of an opportunity. But I said I would. So they were there, and they started work at 11 o'clock at night and worked at 7 o'clock in the morning. And that was Monday night, Tuesday night, Wednesday night, Thursday night, Friday night. And they got paid on Thursday night.
Now, what machines were they on?
Well, we were baking and we were packing. And a lot of it originally was on the marshmallow end. Because in the late 1960s, they were breaking into the market in Britain with their mallows, which were very good. The Kimberley, Mikado and Coconut Cream were very good biscuits. And they were breaking into the English market, which unfortunately collapsed in the early 70s when the trouble started in Northern Ireland. And because they were selling them as Irish biscuits with ethnic green, white and orange labels on them and entered the competition to win a prize in Ireland, all of a sudden in the 1970s, the bottom fell out of it. But by that time, they were talking about the move and other work. The chocolate department was on night work as well. And it was to pick up the slack of plants being moved.
And the troubles that broke out in the north actually caused the sales of biscuits imported into England.
It fell, the market just collapsed. And they had in the warehouse what was known in Jacobs for a while as the Mallow Mountain.
My goodness. And it's extraordinary.
They actually had a bad year that year from the point of view of profits and things. And of course there were all sorts of complications to that, because the salesmen who were on commission said, well, it wasn't our fault the trouble started in the north, and what about the money we were promised? And it got quite messy. It got very messy indeed that stage.
So what year did you retire?
Well, I didn't retire from Jacobs. I left Jacobs in 1973.
Why did you leave?
I was in production, and I had been night work manager. Night work was finishing, and I suppose I looked at it and didn't see a future. I felt I would like to get back into personnel work, and a job came up outside that I could go to as personnel manager. And really, only when I got there did I realise how much I knew and what a great training ground Jacobs had been, because you'd been exposed to everything in my life there. And so I went back into personnel, and I was in that for the rest of my life.
And where was that?
I went to Dundalkin Paper Mills. I left that one before it closed. I went to an electronics company, Intellectron in Tala. Left that when it closed. And then went to the Smith Group.
Yeah.
And closed it. I closed 25 companies for them. And then I went self-employed as a personnel consultant, mainly in the outplacement and redundancy counselling area.
That's it. Well, do you have fond memories of Jacobs?
Oh, yes.
Your time there?
Oh, yes. First of all, I learned an awful lot there, but all aspects of business. I met some lovely people there. I mean, when I left, there was a lady who worked, she wasn't a forewoman, she was just working in one department that I'd come in contact with. And when I left, although I was a Protestant, she had a mass said for me.
A mass said?
Yeah. And she gave me a mass card for my future.
My, yeah.
And I was very touched with that.
Oh, that is touching, yeah.
So, some lovely people, some of them I still know, because, an interesting thing happened, because I had kept my money in the pension scheme. Which meant, although I wasn't employed there, when I came to pension age, I officially became a pensioner. and I was able to go to the new place and buy biscuits.
Yeah.
As a pensioner, and met people that I had worked with.
Yeah.
30 years before. So that was it. But I never worked in Talla. I only worked in Bishop Street in the old factory.
And, you know, that was the old Jacobs. That's where,
yeah, yeah.
That so many things, as you spoke about during this interview, remained for so many years. You know, there wasn't, I don't think there was that much change in all those years, was there?
There was a change in the ethos of the company, there's no doubt about that. It moved from being a Quaker company with a very strong, I suppose, humanitarian ideals, for which, by the way, in return, they demanded high levels of behaviour from their employees, and no messing, but to become one that was run by accountants, and being run very much for profit.
And aesthetically, did it change? The structure, the buildings, the machinery.
Well, it was all moved, and it went from being a 5-story building with a lot of problems of moving stuff up and down to a 1-floor new factory, a very modern factory in Talla.
Yeah, but in Bishopstown,
Bishop Street, they built a new warehouse while I was there, which was highly automated at the time, and they were one of the first companies to put in a computer, which was about the size of a house, and worked on punched cards. And that was one of the first computers came in, and you probably as much power in your mobile phone now as they had altogether in that. And then they had lots of, they were very advanced in their biscuit technology.
Yeah.
Were very advanced in that, because I did a biscuit, cookie manufacturing a course from an American company when I went into production there from personnel, and found that Jacobs were way ahead of some things, especially in the area of marshmallows and chocolate biscuits. They were very well up on that, and they were very good at it.
And why was the baking so good?
Experience, I would say, and it was, they had the facilities to try things, and they had some people in there who had good vision and kept up with technical changes and food technology changes. I mean, there was a laboratory in there that had 2 qualified food chemists and a couple of technicians who were continually testing for quality, but they were also testing new lines. And when one of the lines that came out was, they did a deal with Guinness's. Guinness's was producing a yeast extract like Marmite, what was called Guinness yeast extract, G-Y-E guy. And they want to make a flavoured sort of cracker biscuit, like a Ritz cracker, but it was Guy crackers, and they produced this. And it was said that a director from Jacobs and a director from Guinness's thought this idea up on a golf course somewhere. They produced it. Unfortunately, as it failed, and it was said afterwards, they sold the golf clubs. But they were tried things like that, and then for a while they went into crisp production and snack food production. And of course, a great thing that they made all along was ice cream wafers and ice cream cones. There was a whole department making those in there.
Oh, for HB
and the cones for Woolworths, because Woolworths used to sell the whipped ice cream. So they made those. When I went, there was a lot of handmade biscuits. And shortbread was made by hand.
Was it?
Rolled and cut by hand.
Was it really?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then it was put into big ovens on trays and taken out. It didn't go on a moving band at that time. Yeah. And there's a lovely story about that, of the manager coming down and saying, isn't it time this shortbread came out? And there was great reluctance on the people there to open the oven and take out the trays. And he said, you better take it out. And when they took it out, they found they'd made a big apple tart that was in the middle of the oven.
So
maybe Jacobs was full of stories like that.
Yeah.
It was a great place to work. And I suppose the thing that I remember most, if you ask me, what do you remember about Jacobs, apart from the people? And people who lived around that area will tell you, Jacobs had a smell of biscuits baking. And this is not quite the same as bread baking, it's a sweeter smell. And in Dublin at that time, in that part of the city, there were three smells. There was Jacobs, there was the Guinness's smell that you still get, but there was another smell that came up from somewhere the back of Smithfield, was O'Keefe's and Acker's, where they were rendering down dead animals and making pet food. And this was a very nasty smell when the wind was in the wrong way. So Jacobs had its smell of baking biscuits, but within the factory itself, there was the smell, for example, in place of the ginger that they used for the ginger nut. And then they would be using lemon essence for lemon puff. And one of the pungent places in it was where they matured the yeast. Because Jacob's cream crackers were made with yeast, and they were like making yeast bread, and it was left to mature in wooden troughs that were never cleaned, because if you cleaned them, you took the bacteria out of it that you needed for the yeast to develop. And this was, remember the smell out of an old pub?
Yes.
I thought you would. But this smell of almost of stale porter, as they used to say.
Yes.
And this yeasty smell that you got, that was there and part of it. And then in the tin wash, you got the detergent that they used to wash the tins. In the laundry, because they had a laundry, they made their own overalls for people. They had a sewing room and they made their own overalls, and then they washed them every week. And there was the laundry and the smell of steam and washing powder, and then the smell of starched, ironed clothing. This is a particular smell as well. And then, of course, if you went out, there was the smell in the stables from the horses. We got the bed of the horses down on peat moss.
Yeah.
This was great because the managers could get a load of that for the gardens. And so there were also, and the printing room, I love the smell of the printing room, the printing ink, and going onto fresh paper.
Yeah.
That was a lovely smell. And walk around the factory with my eyes shut. If they said, where are you now? I could have told them.
Oh, it's terrific the way you described exactly each separate smell. But and they all bring back memories too, don't they? Each one of those.
They do. And probably, I got that smell. You usually get that smell in Talla of the biscuits baking, but I'd say a lot of the ancillary smells disappeared.
Neville Wilshire. Listen, it was great. My goodness, what an amount of information. And thank you so much for talking to me.
You're really welcome.
Thank you.